All right. How many of you are just slightly depressed after watching that? Any of you? I'll tell you what, that's made me tired watching that. As I watched that video myself for the first time the other day, I thought, wow, you know what? There is just one main thing in that I think is descriptive of every one of us, or maybe at least the majority of us. And believe it or not, it's that darn alarm clock, isn't it? I mean, it's one of those experiences, as I was thinking about it, that we love to experience. And I'll kind of get you ready for tomorrow, because I know most of you will experience this in the morning. And it happened to me this morning where, you know, you're asleep in bed. You're having the best rest you've had. You're maybe having a great dream where you're in the best shape of your life, right? Your marriage is awesome. Your kids are great, or whatever in your life is just going great. And all of a sudden, just in the middle of it, you hear this, you know, that, and that just happens. And the thing is, as I was thinking about it, is it doesn't just happen on average one day a week for you, does it? It happens one day, and then the second day, and the third day, and the fourth day, and so forth. And I don't know what your average is. For me, it's about 6 days a week that I hear that just horrific sound in my ear. Now, when you think about life, though, it's funny, and you think about our experiences in life, they tend to fall within the sounds of an alarm, don't they? So, like, you have an alarm that kind of kicks off your day, and then you go throughout your life in that day, and then you have another alarm sound that kicks off the next day, and on and on and on. And when you think about it, with as diverse as we all are here today, we have husbands, and we have fathers, and we have mothers and wives, and we have single parents and single adults, and all these different things. We have all these different backgrounds and all these different deals that we deal with, and they all kind of fit, if you will, or are crammed between the sounds of an alarm. And unfortunately today, when we think of life, you know what most of us think? We kind of say that what's happening in between the spaces of the alarms is what we refer to as the rat race. Have you ever felt that way? Or the grind. Or monotony. And it just happens, and it goes from here to the next day, to the next day, to the next day, to the next day, and so forth. Well, that right there, as I said 2 weeks ago when we started this series on Modern Family, is one of the motivators, one of the key motivators behind why we're doing this. Because when you really start talking to most people today, and they look at their experience as an individual, as the rat race, and when you kind of dive a little deeper, what most people refer to in their family life within that space of the alarms sounding is that they use words that are not very encouraging. They don't use words that leave you with a lot of hope. A lot of times with the words people are using today when they describe what's happening between that space is that I'm tired. Have you ever been there? I'm frustrated. I'm angry. I'm lonely. There's pain and all these things. And as I have heard from many people and as I've read about it today, in the family specifically, what you're finding is most people really summarize their family experience as just trying to survive. You ever been there? Where that within the space of the alarm sounding each day to the next, to the next, to the next, that you have this thing that you call family life, that you have duct taped and you're doing everything you can to try to just hold it together, to just kind of nudge it over from one day to the next, to the next, to the next. And 2 weeks ago when we began the series, I shared with you all, and I just want to reiterate today that the passion we have in this series is to try to get down into that space between the sounds of the alarm with you, because that's where we all are, and to, as best as we can, give hope to what your family experience is like. Because I'd share this with you last time we spoke, and I'll tell you again, and I don't say this to be cliche, I don't say this in any way to just blow smoke, but most people today, when they say their family experience is just in survival mode, God has so much more for your family than that. God doesn't want for your family just to survive, but to thrive. You hear me? God really, really designed it that way, and God really wants that to happen. So I want you to repeat that with me, okay? It's a little positive thinking today. Is God doesn't want for my family just to survive, say it. God doesn't want, but thrive. Do you believe that? I'm not trying to pump you up. I'm just telling you the honest truth. And today what we're going to see is the design behind this and how that God designed and created the family and the home to thrive in the midst of anything and everything that you and I encounter in life. Now, 2 weeks ago when we began the series, the first thing I shared with you was that what I see today as being one of the primary root causes for families just being in disarray and having problems and struggles is really something that's kind of simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And what I shared with you was is that for many of us today, what we need to start doing is shifting our thinking about how we view the family. Because it's true that for most of us, when we think of church, when we think of the places we work, when we think about organizations we buy services from or products from, we view all of those kind of in the category of an organization. You with me? So that you have a president, you have a vice president, CEOs, and all these worker bees, and then you have a mission, a vision, you have all these things that they do and an end product that they provide. But with the family, for whatever reason, most of us, we can't even the smartest people with the greatest business acumen, stand back and they look at the family and they don't know what to do with it. So they kind of set it over here to the side and they say, well, it's just kind of in a class in and of itself. And so I don't know what to do with it. And as we talked about a couple weeks ago, the reality is that the family is actually an organization. And our mindsets have to shift from thinking about everything else as an organization and family as just a standalone, because the reality is it is an organization. But it's a very, very unique organization. It's an organization that was designed and created not by man, but by God in the beginning. And it was an organization that to us, and for my opinion, it is probably the most complex, complicated organization to run effectively. Are you with me? Any of you that manage employees, you say, this is easy, right, compared to trying to lead a home. And the reason why that we feel that way oftentimes is because we just don't know what to do. And what we looked at 2 weeks ago is that the starting point, I think, that for many of us is that we have to become clear about our vision for our family, clear about our vision for our home. And I shared with you that if any of us were to go to an organization today, a business that you work for, or you were interviewing with a company, and you were to sit down with the leadership in that company, and you said, hey, what's your vision for this organization? And if they looked at you and said, I don't know, you would not have a lot of confidence in that organization's survival, would you? But don't you know today that in the family, that if I sat down with most of us or most of you, and you were to ask me or I were to ask you, hey, what's your vision for your home? What's your vision for your family? If I spoke to the husband, he may say one thing, right? If I spoke to the wife, she may say something totally different. And as a result of that, that's why there's chaos in the home today. And so what we looked at is in Proverbs 29:18, where Solomon wrote, and he said this. He said, without a vision, the people become unrestrained. Without a vision. And see, what vision does is it's something that inside of you stirs up an emotion of what you say should be and what could be. And it moves you towards action. It actually, what vision does, clarifies what you're to say yes to and what you're going to say no to, because anything gets in the way of that vision actually is a distraction. And so as we looked at in Joshua, and in our first time together, we looked at a guy by the name of Joshua who actually came in and provided leadership behind Moses. And when Joshua was at the end of his life, at 110 years of age, Joshua pulled all the leaders of the tribe of Israel together, and he said this. He said, guys, I want to tell you what is key to the success of this nation thriving for the future. He said, you have to decide who you're going to serve. And he said, are you going to serve the idols that the Amorites are serving today in our land? Or are you going to serve the idols that maybe some of your fathers served on the other side of the Jordan? Or are you going to serve the one true God that provided for you manna from heaven every day? Are you going to serve the one true God that provided a way of escape from the Egyptians? Are you going to serve the one true God that has done all these things? And Joshua said, guys, you have to choose. And then Joshua clearly declared, he said, guys, listen, for me, I've made that decision. And many of us have seen this on the doors of homes and all this, where it says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And that's what Joshua said. And I challenged each and every one of you that week to take this card, and you'll actually find these at the back if you want to take one if you weren't here. And I said, you as an individual, you as a family, you as a single parent, whatever the case may be, where you're at, you need to make a decision if you're going to serve the idols of money and success and power and relationships and all those things, or are you going to serve God? What is your vision? And you need to figure that out, because that right there is absolutely foundational and it is critical for everything else in your family and in your life. Now, if you went and you were a good student that day and you took that card and you went home and you prayed about it on your own, or if you had a little business meeting with your spouse and you took this card and you came up with your vision statement and you wrote it all down and what makes you unique and all these types of things, if that's what you did and here you are 2 weeks later and you're saying that it doesn't work, then I understand. Because the thing about a vision statement is, the thing about having a clear vision that is about God, because I think many of us in our hearts, that's what we want, is that sometimes it's not just enough. It's that the vision statement is putting on the wall, the vision statement of memorizing it, making it memorable and portable and all those things. Sometimes that's not enough. Oftentimes it's not. And you know this is true because oftentimes you have seen, and I have seen, organizations that absolutely have the greatest vision statements that are out there. You ever seen this? And they fail miserably. that they'll sit there and they'll have this vision statement. It is so compelling. It is so moving. It's so heart-gripping. And yet you look at it and you go, man, they can't help but succeed. And then all of a sudden you watch them, and over time you see that they just can't move the football down the field, that they keep struggling and struggling and struggling to fulfill it. And one of the examples I thought of that I think clearly illustrates this was back in 2003, 2004. And some of you guys, you'll remember this. Girls, depends on what your thoughts are on sports. But back in 2003, 2004, the Los Angeles Lakers at that time had a team that had won NBA championships in their history, but had actually won some fairly recently. And they had on their team at the time Shaquille O'Neal, you ever heard of him? Kobe Bryant, Derek Fisher, they had Rick Fox, they had all these guys on their team. They had a great, talented team. And in the offseason, they decided they wanted to do one thing, that they wanted to put together, as they referred to it, the dream team. And so the Los Angeles Lakers signed three all-stars that were free agents. They signed Karl Mailman Malone. Any of you heard of him? They signed Gary Payton, a point guard, one of the best point guards ever for the Seattle Supersonics. And they signed Horace Grant, who actually played for the Chicago Bulls with Michael Jordan in their heyday. And they put all these guys on this team, and they had every talent that you can imagine. Kind of like today they're saying the Miami Heat does. And in as far as NBA history goes, most people thought there was more talent, finer coaching, and every ability that's possible on that team. And so when you look at it, they were going into the season. They had a very clear vision, didn't they? Win the NBA championship. That's all they want to do, right? Make lots of money and win the NBA championship. They had a coach that was one of the best in Phil Jackson. They had all these players with all this money. They had an opportunity. They could put the best product on the court week in and week out. And as they started off the season, you start seeing them sputter a little. And then you start seeing them catch and get a little traction. And by the NBA playoffs, they actually went into the playoffs, made it to the finals, and they were actually going to play and were paired up with the Detroit Pistons. Now, when most of us saw this happening, I thought, wow, L.A. is going to win this thing. They can't help but win. And in that playoff series, L.A. won one game, and Detroit just beat the mess out of them. And after the dust settled, and after all this stuff happened, a lot of people were scratching their heads in disbelief, going, now look, they had the greatest vision statement ever. They had this team that it was the best team money could buy. They had all these things, and yet they failed. Why? Why did they fail? And all these prognosticators afterwards and all these individuals started kind of coming forward, and Karl Malone retired after that year and all these things. And what they said was, is that the reason why they didn't succeed was not because of a lack of vision. It wasn't because of a lack of talent. It wasn't because of a lack of opportunity or any of those things. It was because of a lack of chemistry on their team. That you had all these guys that were aiming really at the same thing, but they all had their own way of how they wanted to get there. They all had this idea of what their role should be on the team. And for whatever reason, they never could come together with chemistry. And you know, chemistry really is made up of a lot of things. One is trust. The other is alignment within what you're gifted in, your roles, right? That Gary Payton shouldn't be playing center and so forth. Not that he did. But those are the things that make up chemistry. And what we have seen throughout years and years and years of watching businesses succeed and fail is that oftentimes, just like the Los Angeles Lakers and having a problem with chemistry, they rise or they fall oftentimes not because of a lack of vision, but because they have a vision, but they don't have chemistry on their team. Jack Welch, who is a great business leader, he was the one that took GE to what it is today. He wrote a book, I read it years ago, called Winning. And this is just a leadership book, and what Jack Welch had to say about it was this. He said, if I were going into another business today, an organization, and I wanted to set this business up to become the best it could possibly be, there is one primary person, there was actually two, but here's one that he said that I would pull in. He said, a great HR director. You know why? Jack Welch said, it's not enough to have a great vision statement. It's not enough to have all this talent on your team. It's not enough to have all this money and all this opportunity and the best product. But what you must have is have people that actually learn their roles and play to their strengths and develop this structure of chemistry in the team. Whenever you see organizations that don't have chemistry, here's what you see. As they're all striving for this and they can't get there, you see a lot of this happening, don't you? A lot of grumbling, a lot of finger pointing. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. He's not doing this. No, she's not doing that. She, he, this and that. They're not in the right role. They're getting in my space. Are you with me? You ever experienced this in work? Oftentimes, this is what you see. And unfortunately today, that's what you're seeing in the home, I believe. Because God created and designed the home. And unfortunately today in our culture and our time, many people have kind of gotten away from the home as something that God actually put a blueprint together, a structure, and all these things. And God has a clear vision for your home. So if you went home and you put together a vision statement, and you said, as Joshua did, as for me and my house, honey, as I would to Melissa, we're going to serve the Lord, aren't we? We go, yeah, we're going to do that. If nothing else changed, the likelihood of that actually happening at times and it being fulfilling for you and you thriving in your family life, it's fairly minimal. It's just not going to happen by chance. But what we see is that in Genesis 1:27, just quickly, when God designed the home, He did it in creation. Now, some of us think that that happened within a few thousand years ago. Some of us may think that it happened a long time ago. But either way you look at it, God created man and woman. And we see in Genesis 1:27, here's how He set it up. It says, so God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him male and female. He created them. And so when we start with that, what that does and what Moses was saying there and what God has done is He actually, from the beginning, He designed the home and He designed the family by creating male and by creating female in His image. If you're a lady here today, you are an image bearer of God, just the same as a guy in this room. We are equal. There is no difference. He created us both in His image. And that's how God designed it. And so when God did this, He said, I have a design in place. You're different, but you're equal. And so then whenever you start thinking about it as someone that wants to devote your family and your life and your future to God, and you say, I want for me and my house to serve the Lord, then the starting point is to understand is that God has a design that He's put for this to actually function within. God actually created male and female, and He has an idea of how this should work or a true design behind how this should work. And so if you really, really want for your home to thrive or your family life to thrive or your relationships to thrive, then what you need to do is you need to draw near to God and say, okay, God, I want it to be about you. What do I need to do? And there's actually a passage in Scripture, and I want us to flip there if you have your Bibles. It's found in Ephesians 5. And in Ephesians, Paul actually wrote this letter to this church at Ephesus. And he deals with a lot of different things. But in this passage in Ephesians chapter 5, we'll look at starting in verse 22. Paul actually overlays two different stories that really is very eloquent, and it's quite beautiful, to be honest with you. It's really, in my opinion, the most beautiful love story ever told. And it's overlaid with two things taking place. But when God basically says, I've designed you male and female, and I have designed the home for it to exist and to work a certain way, when we draw near to God and say, I want for your vision to be what I want to live for in my family, God says, okay, here you go. And he draws the wife close, and he says, here's your job description with roles and responsibilities. Have you ever had one of these before? And guy, come here. Here's your job description with roles and responsibilities. And in Ephesians 5, Paul is writing to these people. And he actually shares within the context of Jesus and the church how marriage should look. Within the context of the church and Jesus, he actually communicates the roles and the responsibilities of the wife, and he communicates the roles and the responsibilities of the husband. Look with me at verse 22, and here's how it starts off. Paul says this, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. Now, I want to stop because I know I just went ahead and tuned some of you ladies out. How many of y'all like that? Yeah. You know, the sad thing is about this passage I have found throughout my 30-some-odd years of being raised in a Christian home and Christian environments and heard this passage a lot, is it's so misunderstood. Because immediately out of the gate, a lot of times what guys that are typically up here preaching, right, they get up here and they just kind of start off and they say, women, you need to submit to your husband. Right? I mean, that's just kind of how they do it. And when you think of it that way, it's kind of offensive, you know, in that way. And so my hope is today is to kind of add the context to the situation. As I said earlier in Genesis 1:27, God did not create man to lord over women. Okay, are you with me, ladies? Okay, are you with me, guys? I hope you're with me, too. Okay, He did not create it that way. God created us as equal, image bearers in God's eyes. But when God actually put together the job description, the roles and the responsibilities, you see it in the beginning in the garden, and you see it even here as Paul's clarifying it in the context of a love story of Jesus and the church. God starts off and he says, ladies, you are to submit to the leadership of your husband. The word submit can mean subject. The word can mean to support. The word can mean to follow. It can mean a lot of different things. And when I looked at my wife the other day and I said, Melissa, when you hear this, what do you hear? You know, through your ears, your pink ears and pink eyes as you see it, okay, in the girl world. How do you view that? And she said, honestly, just to support your leadership. And I thought, wow, that's great. And what's very, very interesting about this, and I'm just going to kind of knock down a few straw men for us before we get going, is this, is that Paul, when he was writing this letter in his day and his culture, women were really seen in a lot of ways as property. Men were actually in a position where they were able to divorce their wife for burning their food. They were able to do anything. And if we all, maybe have read, Jesus actually came on the scene and kind of said, guys, you can't do that. That's just not right. Well, Paul's writing this culture where it's a male-dominated society. And what you need to understand is Paul is not being barbaric or commanding or demeaning to women here. He's actually talking to them. He's addressing women and he's going to address men here in a minute. And in essence, what Paul is saying is, I appeal to you, ladies, that if you really, really, really want for this marriage, for this relationship, for your home to thrive, then here's what you need to recognize. Is that in the context of Jesus and the church, you're the church. In the context of this love story between Jesus and the church, in the context of the love story between a husband and a wife, that you are equal with your husband. But what I call you to do and I ask you to do is to willingly fall under the leadership of your husband. Now, when you think about the word submit, many of us go, dude, that's just a nasty word. The truth of it is as adults, we all submit every day, don't we? How many of you have a boss? You don't submit to your boss, what happens? You get fired. Now, I'm not saying you get fired by your husband, ladies. I'm not saying that. We submit to the government, right? You don't submit to the government, you don't pay your taxes, you go to jail. You don't submit to the police and the laws, you go to jail or you get tickets. We see submission all the time. The reason why this today is such a cringe factor is because in our culture, what people are saying is that it's between the sexes, right? And so it's dividing the sexes and saying males are better than females, and that's not at all what it's saying. Here's what's very unique about it, is that we know in books that have been written, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, and all these other books, is that we're different. Y'all agree with that, ladies and guys? We're very, very different. And if you haven't been married long or if you haven't been dating long, you haven't figured that out yet, it's true. You'll figure that out more as you go. But what's so incredible about these words of God on how the home should function and how the relationships between the wife and the husband should work is that it is designed into the very core, into the very fabric of the men in this room as well as into the ladies of this room. Follow with me. Verse 23. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Verse 24. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. Ladies, if I were to ask you, do you have a problem with unconditional love being expected from your husband? Any of you think that's a bad thing? But if I were to ask you, what about unconditional respect for your husband? Does that kind of make you cringe a little? Because what we oftentimes think is that respect is to be earned, don't we? It's not just to be given freely. But herein, what Paul is saying is that actually, no. God, when he designed the home, he created you differently, male and female. There was a survey that was out a number of years ago, and when I say a number, recently, that it actually was for men. And it said, guys, tell me this. What would you pick is the number one thing you desire from your spouse in your marriage? Love? Or respect? Over 80% of the men said respect. God has designed men to the core of who they are to desire, to want their wife to think and to respect their leadership. That's how guys are wired, ladies. So that is why this is not an issue of culture. This is an issue of design. This is an issue of how God made us. And a husband can never thrive in his role as a leader and thrive as a lover to you, women, and become the best husband and the best father in your home when his core need relationally in the marriage is not being met and being respected and being shown that I support you and I love you and I want to follow your leadership. It won't happen. So this is why it's so interesting that this model of marriage is not a cultural thing. It's the way God designed it. It's the way God made it. And just as Paul, when he spoke back in his culture 2,000 years ago, it was countercultural. And just when we read it today, it's countercultural. This is design. This is not male chauvinism or any of that. Now look at how we can move on, ladies, to the guys. Y'all ready for that? Because have you ever noticed this, that in leadership, oftentimes in an organization, that if you're going to lead an organization, you're held at a very, very high standard with a lot of stress and a lot of pressure and a lot of things you're responsible for. You ever notice that? In business or anywhere you go, that's what you find is the higher you move up, if you will, in a leadership level amongst equals, right? You have a lot on you. Look at how Paul handles this with husbands. Verse 25, husbands, love your wives. How? As Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. Guys, I want to tell you, God says the most important thing you can do for your wife is to cherish her and love her above all else in your life. Above your job, above your kids, above your buddies, above your sports, your recreation, hobbies, you name it. God says that outside of him, next to him, the most intimate relationship, the most cherished person in your life must be your wife. Ladies, the number one thing that you desire, and I can't say this because I'm a lady, but I can say this from my wife, and I can say it from other books that have been written. More than anything is to know that the most important person in your husband's life is you. You agree with that? That's what you want to know. And whenever a lady does not feel, guys, that that is where they stand in your life, then they feel very, very lonely. They feel very lost. It's kind of a scary place to be. And unfortunately today, ladies, the way that you respond to that, a guy would say, is that you're mothering me. You ever said that, guys? I already have one mama. I told Melissa that one time. I don't need another mama. And the reason why that happens, guys, is because when we had those types of altercations, it's because Melissa does not feel inside that I'm putting her first above my work, above my pleasure, above the kids, above any of those things. And God designed her with a need to be loved. And guys, what God calls us to do for our wives is to love them like Jesus loves us as the church. It's the greatest love story ever. How did Jesus love the church? He loved the church so much. He loved us so much that he died. You love your wife that way. Ladies, would you have a problem following a guy that loved you so much he would die for you? I don't think so. This is a design that God has created for the home. Skip down verse 28. He says, in the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. One day when I was reading this verse, I thought to myself, and it was very convicting, Jonathan, what is important for you, for your body? And I started listing them off. Exercise, although you probably can't tell it. diet. Time with God, time out away from, you know, my kids screaming and pulling at me all the time, although I love them, but I need that time. College football, for crying out loud. I mean, that's so important to me. You know, I mean, War Eagle, by the way. I was thinking about it. And what Paul is saying here in verse 28 is that, guys, you're to love your wife like you love your own body. So that day, I'm just being honest, I was so convicted about this. I thought, man, I don't ever think about Melissa's needs and interests above my own or equal with my own. And so I went downstairs and sat down with her. I said, baby, I read this verse. It's messed me up. What's important to you? What can I do to help you feel like I love you as much as I love me? And what's as important to you is as important to me. And so we start making adjustments in our schedule so she can have her time with God where I help with the kids, or so that she can go to the gym, or she can have nights out with her sisters or with girlfriends and all these things. Why? Because God says, I'm to love her like my own body. Verse 29, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church. Verse 31. Therefore, and this is a quotation out of Genesis, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. Now, I want to tell you something that really just kind of hacks me off. I'm just being honest. Today, when you look at most marriages, it looks like two businesses trying to do business together. It's like you're trying to do a partnership deal. You with me? It's kind of like, you know, in the business where I worked in a lot of different things in business where we were putting together what we called partnerships and all this. And here's what you know about partnerships. There's some legal binding agreement between them. You with me? And it's all about how it can benefit both sides. And then that's how you work. But whenever that partnership quits working and producing benefits for both sides, what do you typically do? You break it off and you go find another partnership. Listen, there needs to be a lot of business mergers in families today. There needs to get away from all this partnership stuff with what's in it for me and all this. The Bible's design, God's design for marriage is for a husband, for a man to leave his parents. Guys, that means move out of your parents' house, okay? Take care of your wife and your kids. Move out. Move in with your wife. Marry her. Love her. Become one flesh. Merge. This is the design of God. This is how God has made it. And when we don't do this, and we start doing this partnership deal, it is not what God designed. And you will never, I'm telling you, you will never experience the intimacy, the joy that God has created for you to experience in your marriage. Verse 32. This mystery is profound. Paul says, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. It's kind of interesting here. What Paul is saying is that when you look back to the very beginning, the marriage between Adam and Eve, the family, was actually a model that the church, the bride in Jesus, would actually be modeled after, reflected through, is this love story of marriage. And that's why Paul is using this here. Verse 33, however, and here's how he ends it. Let each one of you love his wife, guys, as himself. And let the wife see that she respects her husband. That is God's design. That is what God wants for each and every marriage in the home. You can sit here all day long and put vision statements up on your wall. You can come and sit in rows like this each week. You can sit here and you can want to all you want. But until you as an individual, as a guy, take up your role and your responsibility that God has given you for you to love your wife like Jesus loved the church. And until you ladies take up the roles and the responsibilities God has created for you and you choose to say, I am going to willfully and humbly support my husband. What will happen is when you do that is that your husband, ladies, will feel like I'm the man for her. I'll do whatever I can for her. I will love her. I will give freely to her and everything for her. And ladies, he will love you like crazy. I'm just telling you, it's God's design. And so for some of us today, some of you guys, you need to lead your homes. You need to start loving your wives like Jesus loves you. You need to quit punking out and using excuses. You need to quit shutting down when you get home. God has designed you to lead. God has designed you to fulfill the greatest relational need in your wife. And if you don't do it, oftentimes, unfortunately, we see someone else comes in and does. And then it shatters everything. Ladies, some of you that are trying to pick up the broken pieces and pick up some of the fumbles that your husband has done, maybe in leading the home, set it down, let him lead. Does he have a learning curve? Absolutely. Maybe he's never done this before. But support him. Show respect to him. Show him that I'm here and I love you and I'm going to support you. And when this takes place in a home, you watch out. Your marriage, your home will thrive. It will absolutely thrive. Now, when I thought about this, here's kind of, if you will, in summary, the vision of the home from God. Here's how God works in his design. And I wrote this down. Instead of it being a rat race, here's what he says. Is that when we go to God individually and we yield our hearts to him as a male and as a female, here's what God in turn does. He points you to your spouse. And he says, all right, man, go love on her. He doesn't point you to your kids first. He doesn't point you to your job. He doesn't point you to money. He doesn't point you there. God says, I point you to your spouse. And then when you as spouses come together, then God then points you, if you have children, to your kids. And then when you as a family come together, God takes the family and he points it to the world. This is the design of God. It's really simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And if you really, 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 really want, and I know I want this for you, if you really want for your family to thrive, if you want for your relationships to be unbelievably great, choose who you'll serve. Take your job description and follow the roles and responsibilities God's given you. Now, if you think that this design is flawed by God, I'll turn it on you a little. Maybe it's just poor job performance. Maybe you need to be written up like I've had to be written up before. And say, no. There's nothing wrong with the design. There's nothing wrong with the responsibility. It's that you just don't do them. This is kind of funny. A number of years ago, I worked for a company for about 8 or 9 years. And it's a Fortune 500 company here in the city. And I heard about one of the presidents. This is awesome. One of the presidents that led the company. And this company had a lot of opportunity. This company was the largest home warranty company in the nation. And it still is today, American Home Shield. And this president of this company had a great team around him of leaders, many of which I worked under. They had cash in the bank. They were a cash-rich business. They had all these things going for them. They had a great vision statement. They had tons of opportunity. And so they had all this. And his role was clearly defined as CEO of the corporation, right? I mean, you would think so. And what this guy actually chose to do was to not fulfill his role. And instead of going to work and working his 8 to 12 hours a day or whatever he needed to work to make this thing happen, what he chose to do was to come in for like a couple of hours and then go to the movie theater. And literally, this guy was sitting in the movie theater for 4 or 6 hours a day watching movies almost every day until he got caught. Now, again, a CEO, a president of a company with all this opportunity, all this vision, and what he chose to do was to not fulfill his role. What happened? The organization struggled. The organization said, we're not meeting our goals. And then when they started doing a little root cause analysis, they said, well, here's probably why. The leader is not fulfilling his role. He's camping out, sipping on Slurpees, eating popcorn, and watching movies. How many of us are doing that? Come on. Get in the game. Play your role. Love your wives, guys. Ladies, support your husbands. Watch what God does. Father, I thank you so much. That God, you're so gracious to all of us. You are so patient. Father, I thank you that in the midst of chaos today, we can have clarity. And the greatest sense of clarity comes from just your design, of how you've designed us, male and female. And you've designed us with needs. You've designed us with desires and hopes and dreams. You've designed us with all these things. And that is what makes us unique. And God, we know that you long for us to have a marriage that looks like that of Jesus for the church. It's an amazing, amazing picture. Father, I pray today that you would open the eyes of all the guys here, including my own, to really, really love our wives. Father, I pray that you would give us a passion for them to be thankful for how you've blessed us, and that, God, we would be willing to die for them, just as Jesus did for us. Father, I pray for all the ladies here today. Some have been hurt. Some may feel like their husbands aren't worth following. Whatever the case may be, some of them with personalities just struggle with this. God, I just pray that you just open up their eyes as well to see that when we play our role, that they will be loved unlike anything they've ever experienced in their life. Father, I pray that you would help all of our families refocus back to you. In Jesus' name.